Welcome to Story Talking. Story Talking is a weekly podcast series about creativity and storytelling and is exclusive to members of Launchora's Storytellers Program. I'm your host, Lakshdatta, the guy who started Launchora, and in every episode I talk to a new storyteller that we feature here in LSP. We'll talk about creativity, we'll talk about storytelling, and we'll talk about the person behind the stories. In this episode, episode 2, my guest is Jessica Day. Jessica Day is the pen name of Nayanika Day, who is 19 and studying architecture journalism in Kolkata. Her story, Broken Pastels, was featured in the spring issue of The Storyteller this year and is also available as a listen story here on Launchora. Jessica writes short stories about life, love, and the teenage perspective. So here is episode 2 of Story Talking with Jessica Day. So, first, tell me, you don't use your real name to write much, right?
Yes, I don't.
Yeah, where did that name come from?
There wasn't really any inspiration behind the name, other than that I just liked it, but I wanted to keep some part of my real name in it, so I kept the last name the same, almost. Yeah. My real name is Nayanika Day, and my pseudonym is Jessica Day. It transfers to D-A-Y.
Yeah.
And also because I didn't want to keep an Indian name, I felt I wouldn't reach out to a wider international base.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, people sort of tend to step over us, maybe.
Yeah.
So I thought an English name would sound better. And also because writing is, I didn't really publish my writings online a lot. And even if I did, I didn't really want my friends to find out.
Yeah.
It was more of a side life for me.
Yeah.
So I kept to stick onto a fake name.
That happens a lot. I've seen that with a lot of writers that even if they're not using their real name, they don't really want their friends to know that they think about this stuff or they write about this kind of stuff. Happens a lot more with people who are writing personal stories. Because then, you know, they're like, this is my safe space. I don't want to put it on Facebook. I don't want my friends and family to know that I'm going through this. So when was the first time that you used this name? Like, when was the first time you wrote something under this name?
I wrote under this name when I was 15. I was 15 then, so that's 4 years back. And even before that, I used to make up random names. But when I was young, I usually used names like, which were, say, a pseudonym of Enid Blyton. I'd make it Avril Blyton or something like that. That is sort of how my romance with books began. And it began with Enid Blyton.
Was that the first author you read? Or the first one you liked?
Yeah, this was the first author I really liked. And for a long time, she was the only author I ever read.
Yeah.
And sometimes while reading her stories, I would think up parallel stories of my own. And then that's how I got into writing. I'd modify her stories and pen them down.
Okay. So I have never read Enid Blyton. And there's so many writers I've never read, but I remember that whenever I saw those books, whenever I see a series of books by the same person, I just feel like I have so much catching up to do. Like, you know, like you look at, I remember in bookstores, you look at the, just a huge column of Stephen King or John Grisham or Agatha Christie. And I'm like, I don't think I'm ever going to be able to finish all of this. So I would just not start. That would be a lot of my experiences with bookstores. And I remember the first book I really, really read by my own choice was Lord of the Rings. And it was because it was in one volume and
that's
I didn't have to read. Yeah. I was like 12 years old. And I remember liking it because it was all in one go. I didn't have to read other books by that same guy to, you know, feel like I had to finish something. Or so how old were you, you think, when you read that first book?
I was seven.
Seven.
Seven, yes.
And you understood whatever was going on in
the
book?
You know, Enid Blyton also wrote Naughty, which is meant for kids of that age.
Okay. Yeah,
I began
not
with that.
Much knowledge about her work. What kind of stories were they?
Well, most of them were about girls in a boarding school. And
okay.
I really pestered my parents to let me go to a boarding school after that, but of course they never allowed me to. And it was about, you know, Secret 7, Famous 5, Small Adventures.
Okay. What was your first experience with, first memory with a kind of story?
Back in school, we used to get a 25 marks essay out of 100. So the word limit was usually 250 words. But once in the exam hall, I was hit by this insane idea. So I ended up writing an essay that was 400 words long. And I was very scared about what she would say or if I would even be awarded the marks or not. But instead, our English teacher, she called me up and she said that I'd done a brilliant work. And she encouraged me to, she literally forced me actually to take part in some story writing competitions. And that's how I started to realize that maybe I'm not that bad. Maybe I can actually write in public after all.
What was that story about, the 400-word story?
The story was actually about a girl who was forced by her parents to study in a particular stream which she does not want. So she has school and tuition throughout the day. But one day, when it's raining, she gets down from the bus on a complete whim. She gets down from the bus on a bus stop that she does not recognize. And there's this huge field and forest, like, sort of thing behind it. It was sort of, I kind of crossed over into magic realism. And then she goes into the field and then she finds this castle, this ruin of a castle in which she finds a pianoforte. And then she meets a woman there who teaches her how to play the piano. So basically, she starts skipping all her classes just to learn that piano from the woman. And she later on goes on to win a prize, which finally makes her parents recognize the talent. But then she never finds the woman anymore. It was very crammed into 400 words.
Yeah, that's a lot for 400 words. I have a tendency to write a lot. Like, I could never do a word limit because for me, it would take me 400 words just to describe why she doesn't want to study. If I was doing that story, why she doesn't want to study that thing. It would take me 400 just to get there. So, I don't think I have... I think I've read almost everything you've written. I don't think I've seen anything non-fictional about you. Why do you think that is?
The reason is really because I'm a very boring person, and if I wrote about myself, nobody would read it. So, I make up stuff.
And I'm happy that people eventually stop feeling that way, because a lot of the stuff that people write on Longer is personal. Things that I don't tend to write that much personal stuff also. And in the beginning, I thought that was my reason too, that why would I, if I could create something fictional that would be interesting, why would I want people to read about me? Like, why would that be interesting to anyone? So what is that the reason that you're drawn to fiction as well? Because it's not about you?
Yes, in a way. I do find nonfiction quite boring.
So do you read nonfiction?
No, I don't. I've tried, but I never finish it. I never finish the first chapter.
When was the first time that you realized that what you have to say is worth sharing with other people?
To be honest, I still don't really get that feeling a lot, but sometimes when I post a story online, which is by the way, an extremely rare event, but even when I do and I see some people commenting that they can relate to it, I think that some encourages me to keep writing.
So I think it was your story that really got people's attention, at least on my platform, was called Second Girl,
Second
right?
Yeah.
So I remember reading that, at least the first part, I remember reading that. And it was, I think I may have said this, because it was a while ago. But, yeah. And I tend to eventually, all stories get to blur together into one giant thing. Because there's just thousands and thousands. But I remember, maybe I wrote this as a comment, but it was one of those stories that I just kept on scrolling. Like it was, because I remember it was very early and we've always had a scrolling reading thing.
Yes.
And I always prefer that to page turning, because online it's so weird to turn a page.
Yeah.
But on when you're scrolling and you don't really know where the bottom is, you kind of just keep going, especially on the phone. So, and that was not a short story.
Yeah, no,
it took me, like, I think, a couple hours.
Yeah.
Now, how was the experience of writing something like that?
There was a story that was a very commercial story, because I wrote it purely for reaching out to my writers and getting a lot of views on it. It was nothing personal. It was nothing I invested a lot of time in. It was just a story meant for the users. I recognized the people who might read it, and then I tried to recognize what they might like in a story, and then I simply wrote it. It was quite mechanical, I think, but somehow it ended up being my most read story. So there was nothing really much to it.
So did you enjoy doing that part then, making something mechanical?
I wouldn't say it was very mechanical, because at one point, again, in my head, the story just branched off into this parallel thing, and then I kind of stopped writing it for a long time in between because I wasn't sure where to go. And then again, I decided to write it back again, and then the second time I tried to pull it more into my own direction. So writing is always enjoyable to me, but that was more of an experimental story to see what people like to read.
Right. So I've tried to write, I had really different experiences with every story I write, I always have a different reason for writing it. But I don't think, every time I've tried to do it that way, the way you described, like predicting or just seeing what they would be into and writing that, I've maybe done that once. And it wasn't my favorite story to write, you know? Because I didn't learn anything from writing it, at least for me. That was the experience, because I just felt like, I think every time I write a new story, I want to have something that I internally learned first. And if I learn something from it, then, you know, maybe someone can relate to it and learn from it. But the only time I tried to write something that I thought people would enjoy reading, and that was a little too lighthearted, and there wasn't much of a thing going on, because most of my stories end up having, they start off normal and then they become really deep, and your characters just start saying things that no one in real life would say. And that's when I enjoy doing that, because it's like, for me, it's like putting weird twists kind of makes it a little surreal. But hopefully by the end of it, you as the reader realize that, okay, maybe it wouldn't be, this world wouldn't be half bad if people did talk like that. Did you already have broken pastels in your head when I asked you to write something?
Broken pastels was something, I never planned on writing a story like that. No, it wasn't pre-planned at all. But when I started thinking about what I could write, I just had this very blurry image of, really, when I say broken pastels, the first thing that comes to my mind is gray sky. So I wanted to write a story that was just entirely gray sky to me. Mm. And then I you know, I started working backwards and forwards, and I started creating the characters out of nothing, and that's how the story came. I mean, when I started writing the story, I had a completely different vision about how I wanted it to go, and then when the story ended, it ended in a completely different place. So it was very on the moment sort of thing. I kind of let that flow.
Yeah, I remember when you sent me the first draft, I think it was halfway through the story that I kind of understood what you were going for. Because I think it was like up until she realizes that he's just like, he's a lost soul himself. I think it was that moment that I felt like I was experiencing her realizing that with her. It's not like, because sometimes, a lot of times, when you're reading something, you get there before the character does. You get to the point of the story before the character does. And that kind of, like, that happens in movies and TV shows so much, because you're like, oh, this is predictable. This is where it's going to go. That's the lesson she's going to learn, and that's what's going to happen, and that would be the end. And that kind of takes you away from the experience, because you're not involved anymore. So that was the one thing that really... that I liked about Broken Pastels, is that she is not just there to have a character arc and then learn something and become someone different by the end. You know, you're just getting to know her for this brief period of time where she has this relationship and it goes this way. And I don't know, I remember the ending was a little, I may have had you explain to me what the ending meant. I have a feeling that that's something that I asked for, because I wasn't sure. So I've never had anyone tell me, I've never let anyone tell me how to write. So, but for some reason, I enjoy doing that to other people. was that something that you find okay when people do that?
Actually, I think your criticism was pretty constructive, to be honest. So, and I've always appreciated constructive criticism, and so I was pretty okay with it, because what you did say, I kind of realized that I'd been pushing the story too far, so I brought it back down on the level that it had been in. There was a very good improvement, and I did appreciate the input you gave, but sometimes I do not appreciate criticism when it's completely negative with no view on how I should have changed it, or how I should have approached it in a better way. That kind of pisses me off, yes. But I'm always happy when people give me constructive criticism, because I feel sometimes as a writer, I just get into the character's head so much, I just end up going beyond it or something. So I always appreciate readers' criticism, yes.
I think that's a very positive attitude. I think I'm not really good with that. Like, I don't write for other people to tell me what the character should or shouldn't be. But the funny thing is that I think it's only when people really get involved that they start taking the character personally, and it becomes their character. That's when they're like, oh, you shouldn't have done that, or that didn't make sense, because, and that itself is a weird compliment, right? Because they're like, oh, this is what I think should have happened, because I think this is what she's like, and this is where the story should go. But so far, I haven't had, like, because one of the weird things is I generally want to be nice to everyone who reads my stories. But so far, I've been lucky where they don't hate it. Or if they hate it, they don't say it in, like, you sometimes get compliments that aren't compliments.
Yeah.
Where they'll just say, the weirdest thing that I remember reading kind of as a compliment was someone saying that I thought this was going to be something really boring and lovey-dovey or something, but you surprised me in the end, you know? So it's such a weird thing to tell someone, because it's not like I want people to get that reaction at the end of the story where they're like, oh, that was worth reading. I kind of want you to have that reaction every, you know, 15 minutes. Do you think that you're just getting started with this whole writing experience, or you want to keep it as something you do for yourself, and it's not like a, do you think it's just a personal calling, it's a way to let things out, or is there something more that you want to explore?
I do write a lot by myself technically, but there are very few of my writings that make their cut online, and usually I do not get a lot of recognition because they are on very obscure platforms which maybe people have never heard of before. So I'm still a beginner and I'm still quite shy in these terms. But I do want to explore a lot more genres, and I do want to explore a lot more of other people's writings, and I do that a lot in my free time. But the main issue is that it's very personal to me, so I don't end up letting any of that on my online profile. But I do think that at some point I would like to be a person who has at least 20 stories on my profile, 20 good, well-read stories.
Yeah.
Now, usually I write every story with the mindset that I might someday post it online, so there isn't really much of a difference in that sense. But sometimes, you know, when you finish an entire story and you look at it and you're like, oh no, this is just utter trash, I could never put it up online. That happens, it tends to happen a lot. But then again, when you look at the story, say after 2 months, you're like, oh no, this might actually be something good, I can put it up online. So there's always this arc that follows that, oh, this is good, this is bad. No, maybe this is good. So there's that.
I have that during the writing process for sure. That's why. So this is something, I don't know if everyone should try this, but it's just the way I write. I usually take a month to write one story, but I don't write it that month. I write it like in the last 4 days of that month. And for the first three, four weeks of that month, I'll just keep thinking about it, in the back of my head, like when I'm driving, when I'm going to sleep, it'll just be in my head, and I'll write down like sentences. But the actual writing takes place over 4 days between like 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. And the second it's usually during the second day that I decide if I'm going to finish the story or not. And if I'm going to finish it, if I reach like 25% of the story is over, then I know I'm going to finish it. A lot of stories I leave at like 22% and they're just going to stay there and probably never get touched. And it's on the last day when I write that last word where the time between me typing that last word and pressing publish is like a minute. Because
even proofread.
I do not. Because I'm too... I still find really weird mistakes in my story that I don't want to... I just let them leave them in because it's been a year. But it'll be something as ridiculous as... I use... My stories are very... They're kind of like a play sometimes where I use the name of the character and the character says this dialogue, right? And there has been one story in which I just said the wrong character's name. And if you read it as that person's name, it totally changes the story. But I hope that no one, you know, noticed it. But it's just because if I didn't publish instantly, I would have too much self-doubt coming in the next morning, you know, because it would be, and that, so during those 4 days, I go through with, this is the worst, this is not something that people should read. And I try not to think about, like I rarely think about what people will think once they read a story. And hopefully they won't care too much. But it's that moment where you press publish, where I'm just like, okay, if I press this button right now, then it's not in my control anymore. And then you
find out all these mistakes suddenly after pressing publish.
Yeah, that's why I added the update feature so people could fix them. So you just, because once it's gone, then everyone gets a notification that it's out, and then I have no choice but to fix it. I can't take it down, you know? So rarely does that mean that, like, that's why I feel sometimes my endings are just, like, instant, because I didn't spend too much time thinking about it. I just wrote it, and it's over. So what would you say is, what kind of stories are these that you're not sharing? I'm curious.
So pretty much the same type that I usually write. A lot of them are about little girls around the age of, say, 12 to 13 or maybe 15 to 16, because I think that's when people go through a lot of changes in their life. It might seem weird to 35 or 40 years old that, you know, people do go through so much during that time. But I think there's that time when you have to select about what you want to do with your life. And I think that's the time when people realize a lot of things about themselves. So quite a lot of them are about teenage anxiety, and some part of it is attributed to love, and most of it is mostly about kids trying to find out who they really are. And
when you're writing this, do you prefer first person? Like, do you write from their perspective?
Sometimes, yes, but I try to get out of the first person mold, because once you start writing in first person, you start writing all your stories in first person. At least that happens to me, because it's so easy to write in that. And then you just, going back to third person feels very awkward. But sometimes I do want to show the feelings of a lot of people in a group, so I try to maintain my third person streak. It's quite difficult after you've been writing in first person for a long time.
That's why I like the play style. Because I get to keep it first person because it's all dialogue. Because I find descriptions to be so tedious. Like, I can't do it. I can't describe someone's mood. I can't describe a city and how it feels to walk into the streets of the city. I'm unable to do all of that. That's why I like people talking to each other, because they get to play with perceptions and not so much internal stuff. Because, like, when you're talking to someone, if I wrote that in third person, then I would be talking about where they're both coming from. But if I just write people talking, then I can skip all of that. And I can just let the dialogue tell you what I want you to know.
Mm.
But the thing I like about what you said was that so many people on Launchora are, first of all, under 18. Like, we have 45% of our users are under 18, and 70% are girls. And it's so I think they would really relate to the things you're talking about, because it's not like you're a 40-year-old writing about teenage life, right? You're still technically a teenager, right? Yes, 19 is still teens. So I think that's interesting, and I think eventually I hope that you do share them before you turn 40. So is there something that you are excited to write about that you haven't written about yet? Or inversely, something that you really want to write about but you're a little scared of tackling it?
Well, most of my stories, they usually have a very somber sort of an atmosphere. But, you know, there are these relationships in the world, like the one between a mother and child, that are very pure and very warm, and it was very fulfilling in general. And it doesn't just have to be between a mother and child. It can be between a girl and a boy. And, you know, the feeling that you have something very complete. And I think capturing that sort of feeling on paper is very difficult, because heartbreaks are easy, killing people off is easy, funerals are easy, but capturing that feeling that I'm somewhere, I'm exactly where I want to be, and that I am complete, you know,
yeah.
That feeling of completeness. I do want to write a story in which that is a theme, but I don't, like, it's going to take some time to capture that feeling. I think it's quite complex. So.
Yeah, sometimes you...
Because every time you see writers who write all these stories in which two people are completely in love, you always have this nagging doubt at the back of your mind that something's wrong, something's going to happen soon, because this isn't going to last.
Yeah, cause so it's not real. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to write something like that, but it's going to be real.
Hmm.
That is one thing I haven't yet tried my hand at.
That's interesting, because it's sometimes I... When I try to write what is would be categorized as a love story, I kind of, like, I don't like it when people say I write love stories, that what I write is love stories, not when they write. I don't mind people saying I write love stories, but I don't want to be, I personally have this thing against being called a love story writer, you know?
Oh, yes.
Because it's such a category. It's not, that's not it. That's not the only thing a story can be about.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about writing about something like completeness, something about being real and some sort of optimistic view of the world, is sometimes you have to live it before you can write it.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that's one of the things that I find weird about writing, is that there are so many experiences that are undesirable, but eventually they become writing material for me. And then I don't know how to feel about that undesirable event, which eventually became a good thing because I found something out of it.
Yes.
You know, like I have these things I've written years ago that were not coming from a good mood or a good place. But I knew in the moment I was experiencing them that I just had to write this so that I had some, it was like I had some content from my mind at that point in life. Because I didn't want to lose that material. And so sometimes it feels like a weird sadistic thing to do to yourself, that you are not, like, I'm not in the best mood, but my writer brain would be like, oh, we need this. We need
yeah.
this. This is good. Keep suffering. This is good. Because we're going to make something good out of it one day. And it feels like you've basically have an internal freezer where you store all this darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Or, because, I mean, rarely in moments of happiness do you want to take a pause and be like, I need to capture this happiness, right? Because how often do we like reading about happy people, you know?
Because
if you're happy, then that, like, I think
That's suspicious in a book,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, it's like, I know something bad is going to happen
gonna
to you.
It's going to happen.
And I can't wait till that happens. Because you in this state is a little boring.
Yeah.
I think it was, I think Leo Tolstoy said the happy family thing, that every happy family is the same, every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. Something like that. And that's the weird challenge about choosing to create something that particularly doesn't exist in real life, all these characters and stories, because you kind of have to live what they're living for a brief period of time in order to be honest and real. Because what you wouldn't want to do is write a character but not go all the way with what you want to represent. You know, like if like for example, in your Broken Pistol story, if she didn't have that ending where she gets to see, he sends her something, right? Like
he's photograph.
Yeah, he sends the wedding photograph, he sends the broken pistols. Like that was a very, like I would have a hard time writing that ending because I would shy away from making my characters go through that experience, you know? But it was, I think it was a very, it was a good thing to do because it's the right thing to write. Like you could have taken a more easier route and given her some sort of good closure. But even this was good closure, you know? So it was good for her in the long run. But in that moment, it just feels like this is not great.
It was mostly closure for me because when I read the story, I was like, oh, I cannot leave it like this. I know the guy gets married, but my readers don't know that, so I'd better let them know.
That's funny. So you had considered not giving her that?
Yeah, I did consider, yes. It was a very last-minute addition, actually.
The wedding photograph?
Supposed to just keep on looking at the magazines. Yeah, she was never supposed to know that he gets married.
Wow.
She was never supposed to know anything about him.
Wow.
But then I was like, no, I cannot do this. And since it was in first person, I couldn't just insert a news article or something to let my readers know that. So.
What would you read if you wanted to feel good?
Charles Dickens, actually.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Is there like this, does it bring you some calmness and peace to read Charles Dickens?
Mm-hmm. You know, that feeling of completeness I was talking about?
Yeah.
I think he captures it very well in his writing. I mean, I'm not talking about bad books like Tale of Two Cities or something, but if you look at his descriptions of Christmas in his books like The Chimes on Hearth or The Ghost of the Christmas Past, Present and Future, I think he captures that feeling extraordinarily well. So his books do make me feel happy, very happy. Yeah.
So, and how often do you read something to feel happy?
Not a lot, because usually when I'm happy, or when I need to be happy, I listen to songs, and I really go to read.
So, I mean, songs are, music is also just a different way to experience storytelling, you know? Mm-hmm. That's kind of why I wanted to call this podcast Story Talking, because I get to talk about stories to storytellers about different kinds of storytelling. So what about, what would be the author or book you pick up when, for just escapism?
Ruskin Bond.
Ruskin Bond?
Yes, Ruskin
Did
Bond.
You have to read him in school a lot?
No, we didn't. I don't think we had a single story by him.
Really?
Not a single one, yes.
I had to read Ruskin Bond in school. And
good.
Did you enjoy, so when you were not in boarding school, right? You said you didn't really do boarding school. So you were just shifting cities and going to these schools every year.
Yeah.
Did you, I mean, I'm a little older than you. I don't know what happens in other schools and Indian education right now, but we had a lot of summer reading. We were given a lot of summer reading in school, and I did not like it. I just, that was the weird thing about, that's why I don't really, I think Lord of the Rings and like Harry Potter series, what might have been the first books that I chose to read. But before then, we were given so many books that were classics, like, you know, Ruskin Bond, David Copperfield is my most hated book of all time. Adventures of Tom Sawyer is also something I hate passionately.
Oh no, that is a great book.
See, that's the thing, though. I was forced to read them.
Yeah.
And if you grow up, if you don't want to do something, whatever childhood memory you have of that experience, you're not going to want it again. Because it reminds me of being forced to read, you know? That's why I wouldn't be attracted to reading that. Did you? I'm guessing you did not. You did not hate reading something.
No, we were never forced to read. So.
Yeah, that's you're lucky. It's not a good way to start off a childhood.
Usually, at the beginning of the year, when we used to get the entire English literature book list, we used to have three different books. So within the first 1 week, I used to finish reading all the short stories present in the syllabus. So it was never a pain for me.
I didn't really. I'm happy now with being able to choose everything that I get to read. But this whole experience as a child I'm surprised that I'm here. Like if I had to tell my 10-year-old self that you're going to write a lot eventually and you're going to read a lot eventually, he would not believe me because he was not into it. It made no sense to, like, I wanted to watch movies. I wanted to watch TV and that's all I wanted. Books were slow movies. You know, because I had to choose to read the next page. But in a movie, you just press play and then it just plays, you know. But I shouldn't endorse that now. I think people should read. So what would you say to anyone who is out there in our community or someone who happened upon this podcast and imagine that there are other, I'm tempted to call you Jessica just because I remember you as Jessica, but your name is, how do you spell it, pronounce your name, Nayanika?
Nayanika.
Nayanika, right? So if you knew that there were other Nayanikas or Jessicas listening and they were, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16, and they also wanted to do what you do, they've read what you write, and they've read, you know, how you write, what would you want to tell them about yourself, about something that they should explore within themselves? What would that sort of message be like?
First of all, something that in general that I think some people might have a misunderstanding of is that writing is not really sitting in a corner of the room and, you know, typing away on the laptop. It's also a lot about, it's not just being inside four walls and writing. It's also going out and exploring. There's a lot more to it. You can have adventures and you can write about it. And if you're Ruskin Bond, then you can just go to the market and come back and write a story about it. And if you're J.K. Rowling, you can just create an entire alternate universe and write about it. But it's not just about sitting in a room. You have to go out. You have to meet new people because people are walking stories. And so you cannot just do it by being inside yourself. You have to go out. And when you explore others, you also explore yourself because you meet people who might be like you in some aspect, who might be different from you in some aspect. So I think exploring others is a way of exploring yourself. And sometimes that translates into writing a lot. And sometimes you have characters that are actually real life characters. You meet somebody on the bus stop for 5 minutes, but you're really attracted to them. You really love the way she talks or the way she conducts herself. So you make her a character in your story. And now she's immortalized forever, at least in your books. So the first point is not sitting in a corner. And the second point is creativity comes in all shapes and sizes. Like I said, there's the J.K. Rowling kind of creativity about a whole new world. Or there's the Ruskin Bond kind of creativity about, one of his books is literally titled A Road to the Bazaar. Like, how more boring can the title of a book be? But it's creative in its own way. So just because you have to be creative, you don't have to push yourself into thinking that I have to make up something which has never been thought by others before. You don't have to push yourself like that. It can be anything. And as long as you write about what you want or you write about your experiences or whatever comes to your mind, it'll be unique because you are unique. So that's what I guess.
You can read Jessica's story in the spring 2017 issue of The Storyteller. And you can also hear her narrate it on Listen. And the story is called Broken Pastels. Jessica's guide that she wrote is titled Writing Outside the Box. It's also available on the guide page. Thank you for listening to episode 2 of Story Talking. We release a new episode every Saturday. And make sure to check out our next episode, where I'll be talking to our next featured storyteller, Brittany Zachariah. And if you haven't already, do check out episode 1 of Story Talking with Lynn Cornelis.